we don't fall into the same trap like we did in SRFA and the first Section 68 of waiting for the final decision. At least that parallel full rezoning process must be running just in case we encounter any challenges on any proposed expedited process that may follow on. The land parcel that I was referring to now, mainly for the phase one location, which is, and they were approximately 8.7 hectares, this meant that the program still required another 40 hectares or so in order to accommodate the two other settlements of Philippi and Kalinicha. One of the land parcels that was identified, assessed, and subsequently proposed at the PMC level and IPSC level was the various properties in Makasa, as you see on the screen. These are approximately 42 hectares, and they are large enough to accommodate all two outstanding settlements for phase two. There were, however, objections received on this land parcel following the minister's visit in August, where in the media it was reported that this is one of the properties which is considered for relocation purposes. We subsequently received various objections now from the community of Makasa, who objected to the proposed relocation of the Langa and phase two households into this site. Their objections were mainly around the requirement for more policing in the area, because adding more people requires more policing, and also the fact that the development of the land in their area should seek to accommodate housing opportunities for the locals also. So those were noted. The negotiations and discussions of this land parcel have been concluded, and it's largely because further discussions will require final confirmation so that the HDA can then action according to the further recommendations which is required. Another land parcel which was explored as a possible option, this was particularly for phase one, is F112629 Cape Town. This is located 200 meters from the Langa settlement, hence it was identified as one of being a suitable properties which could be utilized for the relocation. We then, on the 18th of November at the HDA, after assessing the properties, we submitted a request to the City of Cape Town for the release of these properties for the transfer program, particularly for phase one. And on the 28th of February 2023, we then received a response from the City of Cape Town, who indicated that the property has been earmarked for Urban Mobility Directorate for IRTI-related purposes. So for these reasons, the property could not be released for the transfer program. The third property, which is being considered as an alternative, is one that I prepared to refer to earlier, which is the Timberlands. This is the property which was initially requested for the program, which is owned by Public Works, with staff being the user department. This property is large enough to accommodate the settlement. We know the challenges towards it and some of the concerns that were raised by itself. However, the HDA is embarking on a process whereby we are entering the discussions with Public Works on to see how we can actually mitigate some of the concerns from the service department. We do acknowledge the processes though of Public Works for the leasing of the land, so these properties are earmarked for phase two relocation, just to make time for the necessary discussions that are required before that. On the funding, I think the National Department actually covered the components specifically from the IPSC resolutions of the 25th of May and the subsequent letters of the 19th of July and their responses from there on. This is just a summary of the funding requirements for the program, particularly for phase one, which is approximately 94 million, with the additional 50 million required for phase two land acquisition. This is to basically allow that we secure land now, since that program is also falling behind. If we secure land now, we can be able to start the statutory processes for phase two while we are finalizing the relocation of phase one. However, these costs do not include any operational costs associated to the program, such as land holding costs, as well as operating costs for the basic services. So in conclusion, like I have outlined earlier, the four components that we require really to make the relocation program work, and they need to align the key terms of the program, mainly on land for relocation purposes. As I said, it has to be large enough and located within the right perimeter to be able to be used for relocation purposes. Then it's funding confirmation, including for land acquisition, bulk networks, and provision of basic services and relocation structures. And thirdly, it's the statutory processes which are required in order to be able to utilize those properties. I think the key thing is that on statutory processes, a full rezoning process will not allow align with an emergency relocation program. So I think that's one of the key decisions that has to be taken, because a full rezoning will lead us basically to February 2025, which the accounting officers did not accept. Then the fourth is the community engagement, both with the engagement with the communities of Langa, Filipi and Kairicha on their willingness to relocate and keeping it that way, as well as the engagement with the receiving communities, as we've seen the challenges we've had from the Esther Fair community, from the Makasa community, from the West Area community, from the particularly the Mitchell's Bay community, objecting to the proposed relocation of occupants into their area. And that does cause considerable delays and has significant implications on statutory processes as well. So our final recommendations on the matter, that we strongly recommend that PLASA centralized program secure immediate confirmation of funding to cover comprehensive scope of the relocation efforts, including provisions for debt acquisition, debt preparation, relocation units, as well as provision of basic services. To facilitate this, it is advisable that the program be funded through special dispensation that allows for the ring-fencing of the necessary funds. Secondly, it is recommended that there should be an active support for the restructuring of the request for the release of the timber labs with the aim of utilizing towards the phase two relocation in that area, which is VDP and Kaidicha. And thirdly, is the City of Cape Town, as, in its capacity as a relevant authority, to intervene in expediting statutory processes in alignment with the emergency or disaster relocation or intervention, as outlined by the rules and responsibilities designated in the implementation protocol. And lastly, a coordinated and intergovernmental approach is strongly recommended towards community engagement, particularly the receiving communities, in ensuring that their concerns and perspectives are truly addressed and incorporated into the relocation process. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Shamas. At Department of Public Works, the infrastructure.
Good morning once again, Chairperson and honourable members. We are going to give a presentation on behalf of the Department of Public Works. My colleagues from PRASA and Department of Transport and Human Settlements, they have already given most of the information. So what we will do as Public Works is to give more information, especially regarding the land that was requested and the land that we were able to release and where we are so far. So as a Department of Public Works, we do receive requests from time to time from various state-owned agencies, including HDA for human settlement. In 2020, we received a request from the Department of Human Settlement requesting identified land parcels here in the Western Cape, most of which were requested for the de-densification of human settlements here in Cape Town in a bid to curb the spread of COVID-19. In the same month, we did receive a request from PRASA, and the same request was then was for us to release the land for the Western Cape, but we are not allowed in our protocol to do so. And when we engaged the Department of Human Settlements, they confirmed that of their request, PRASA is included in that. What we received was a request for 17 land parcels that were targeted. Of the 17, Public Works had a custodianship over three of those properties. One was in Gauteng, and two were here in the Western Cape, the details of which are in the next page. The one in Gauteng, we're not going to discuss, obviously, because it's relevant for this matter. The two in Western Cape is the one that my colleague from HDA was referring to. The Easter Refer portion number 981, which is a 23 hectare property that is currently utilized by SAPS. I heard my colleague Chairperson mention that they would request, as part of their recommendation, they would request that Public Works relook at this request from the HDA. The previous response that we had given to them was that the property is being used by SARS for training purposes as a shooting range, an anti-gang unit there, public order policing, and technical response unit. But if that conversation comes, I think we will just have to engage with SARS and see if those services can be relocated to another property. Because as you can see, adjacent or underneath that property, there's another property, also a 23-hectare property that SARS is using for basic police development planning. And if those services by SARS can be combined, we'll be happy to have that conversation. Just to say, Chairperson, that we are amenable to have that conversation further. When those two properties were not made available by SARS because they were using them, as a department, we then identified 7 more properties that can be used for these purposes. The biggest portion of them was the farm 644 in Stellenbosch, which was measuring 17.7 hectares that was owned by Public Works, and another portion of that farm at 6.3 hectares is owned by the Western Cape Province. The rest of the properties were not selected, or at least were not prepared, I assume, Chairperson, because of the size of those properties, because each one of them are ranging between 1.3 hectares and 3.4 hectares. So the portion 644, it's an adjacent property owned together by Public Works and the Western Cape Province. We were later informed that the local municipality, which is the Western Cape, and relevant communities were not in support of that land, hence the involvement of Public Works started to be limited from that end onwards. And the Minister had already approved, from our side, the Minister had already approved the release of the 17.7 hectares and signed a power of attorney in favour of the Human Settlement Department. So, Chair, I think for us, what just to highlight where we are, and at least what we do as Public Works to assist when we receive requests such as this, that we remain committed and will make land available as and when we receive such requests. We do receive requests from Rural Development, the Regional Land Claims Commission for Restitution, and Human Settlements and HDA. And when we do receive such, there's a process that we follow, which is just due process, to confirm the actual ownership of the properties, confirm if any other department is using such a property, and then we do physical inspection of those properties, and then followed by valuation, after which, if the properties are deemed to be available, then it's given over to the repairs department, who then in the in-local inspection, they also determine if the property will be suitable for their use. And in this case, the HDA has indicated that the portion in Stellenbosch is the one that is most suitable for them to use for phase two, which we are willing to have more engagement with them. After which the minister signs a special power of attorney for them to use the property. Chairperson, our involvement in Public Works is limited to the release of land, and we remain available for further engagement. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, DPWI. Right.
One presenter has their phone here.
Well, colleagues, I think we're going to then take a set of questions. You will direct it to where it needs to go, and then we will take response. I will note your sequence of hands.
Can I proceed, Chair?
Please do.
Thanks very much. I had a whole series of questions, but having listened to the presentation, some of them have been answered, but I mean, it really leaves us with a situation where, with the greatest respect, the decision made to terminate the security of PRASA back in October 2019, which precipitated the whole problem, really now, we're seeing almost 4 years down the line, is creating a contractual situation in Cape Town. I also just want to point out that it's not only PRASA, but we have a similar situation in Helderberg with SANRAL that has allowed a large amount of incursions onto their road reserve. And it becomes very difficult when one has several spheres of government where there are certain entities that don't necessarily take the safeguarding of their spaces particularly seriously and then expect other spheres to step up and try to deal with it. Because, I mean, what's now to do with a situation where, you know, quite honestly, nobody is going to be happy about any of this. And I think that the constant consultations, whereas they are certainly to be commended, doesn't really seem to be achieving any kind of outcome. So listening to everything this morning, it seems that there are essentially two, maybe three pieces of land that may essentially be suitable. I'm not talking about the Sequoia package in Philippi. That seems to be in process. But essentially the land in Macassar, the land, what I can gather, would be the police land. Is that the Stellenbosch land, which is the two parcels? And then the Itemba land. But, I mean, each one seems to come with a unique set of problems. So my question really at this point is where to from here? I mean, it's good and well to have presentations from all of you explaining what the issues are. But at the end of the day, one has a very large community that needs to get access to affordable and safe public transport. One has people who are, for various reasons, living in deeply unsuitable spaces that were occupied, that need to be moved, that need to be accommodated. And one has receiving communities that really appear to be very resistant to this. It's an impasse. From what I can gather, there have been 3 variation orders on the Philippi evictions. Time is running out. Even if an offer was made on land now, in a previous life when I was an attorney and a conveyancer, it will take, at least if there were no problems and a deal was signed today, 2 months, 3 months to transfer land. And you can't just settle people in a bare piece of soil. The process is running out of time. You know, so what is essentially going to happen now? We understand that there are delays, but what progress has been made on those delays? The budget, fine, we've heard quite a lot of evidence about various spats, but at the same time, one also can't give a city 50 million rand 3 months before year end and expect them to be able to actually spend it successfully. Why was there a refusal to roll over that funding? It seems like a completely reasonable expectation. Also, knowing Cape Town quite well, if it becomes common knowledge where people potentially might be resettled, it's very, very possible you're going to see further incursions on that land. What measures would be taken by PRASA, HDA, human settlements, potentially to stop that, so that one actually can retain the land if you do take transfer in order to resettle communities? That, I think, is a very important issue. And public works. There has, for a long time, been a narrative in Cape Town specifically where there is very much a land shortage with housing, that Public Works does own a number of sites. Were these the only sites that you could identify as being potentially usable, or is there potentially other land? And then lastly, communities become socially invested in the area where they are. People have children who go to school, they have shopping routes, they have friends, they have communities, essentially. So it is completely understandable that you can't just take a community and shift them 10, 15 kilometers. That's very dislocating. But at the same time, given the impasse that we're seeing here, are there any potential options that might require a slightly more distant shift of communities in order to accommodate this? Because, I mean, one's really sitting with so many competing and disputed issues here, and at the end of the day, the current situation, it simply cannot continue, because it is simply strangling the economic aspirations of people living in the Khayelitsha corridor, and has to be resolved. Thank you.
Okay, can we get appropriate responses to that, and Honourable Swamya and Honourable Mani. I just don't want big issues to get lost, okay? Responses to any of the issues raised by the entities, you can go at as and when issues. Dr. Dili?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Chair, I will respond on the issue of the role. It's not that, it's not just that we, the department, don't want to support the rollover. The reason we were negative is because the city, in a meeting that we had with them, they identified some projects, not the projects that we, that the grant was meant for. And that's where we differed with the city. If the city, if we could maybe could have been an agreement between ourselves, I think it was not about us not wanting to support. It was about the city saying won't be transferring the money to HDA, and want a rollover, and want also to spend the grant in other informal settlements. We then said we can't support that because initially when we requested the funding, it was for the 16 informal settlements in Khayelitsha, at Khayelitsha, and the informal settlements, all the communities residing on the Plaza line. That was the problem, Honourable. Thank you.
Because come to you.
Thank you, Chair. I think for us, it was the question of whether it's the only sites that were available. The answer, the simple answer is no. We identify land based on the criteria that is given to us by the clients that are requesting. For this particular case, I think we were given a 10 to 25 kilometer radius. So we're looking around those and supporting what you said, that the communities become invested in the areas that they live in and they wouldn't want to move further away. Most of our properties that we have here are used by the defense for their bases, the various bases, Air Force, Naval, and all that, and mainly subs. But we do have properties, they may be flung out maybe a bit far for the communities to go to. So we use the criteria given. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Just in terms, Honourable Member, in terms of securing the land, once we've dealt with the relocation and that we don't have re-invasion on the, particularly in the rail reserve. Certainly from process side, our security intervention is specifically aimed at addressing that item as well. Where we've got relocation, both in terms of Operation Makela, as well as we need to deal with the long-term relocation, short-term intervention is around our security deployment on the ground. In addition to that, as we indicated, going forward is the securing of the reserve by the walling and fencing program to prevent re-invasion on the corridor. So certainly from our side, the security plan that we've deployed is to address that matter of ensuring there's no re-invasion within the rail reserve.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure whether it's through you I may attempt to respond to the comments on the rollover.
You are from?
I'm from the city of Cape Town, Chair.
Oh, okay, sure. That's right.
Thank you, Chair. Please do apologize for my husky voice. I will try to project. Chair, on the issue of the rollover as it relates to the 16 informal settlements, I'd like to bring context to this issue. Firstly, as early as May of 2022, when the issue of the 16 informal settlements was brought to the City of Cape Town, we provided feedback to the National Colleagues that of the 16 informal settlements where the city was required to provide services, we have in actual fact made budget available in the 2022-23 financial year. And that presentation was given on the 9th of May 2022, Chair. And furthermore, Chair, there have been meetings that were called by the national colleagues in which the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation was also in attendance, where we were requested to present update on progress made in terms of servicing those informal settlements. The meetings, Chair, were, from what I could pick up from my archives, 20 January of this year, 2nd of February of this year, 7th of March of this year, 12th of April of this year. In all those meetings, a report was given where we indicated the status insofar as the servicing of those settlements is concerned. We indicated that out of those 16 informal settlements, the City of Cape Town had completed providing services to at least 10 of the identified informal settlements, with work well underway to ensure that the remaining informal settlements were serviced by the end of the financial year. Yes, there was an issue that was raised pertaining to the level of services that relates to the national norms and standards, and we gave a commitment when there was a shortage of taps and toilets as it relates to the national norms and standards that the City of Cape Town will make funding available to make sure that we augment that. Those reports were made, Chair and Honourable Members, to the colleagues at National Human Settlement. So when we received the gazette that 111 million would be transferred or was transferred to the City of Cape Town, which was on the 30th of March, the gazette, the funds were gazetted on the 29th of March. On the 30th of March, we received notice from National Department of Human Settlements confirming that 111 is transferred. On the 4th of April, we received a letter which stated the conditions, in other words, highlighting areas where that 111 million should be spent. And indeed, it did say 16 informal settlements and for PRASA. The executive mayor then responded to the national minister, indicating in the letter of 19th April, indicating that the 16 informal settlements referred to in the letter were already covered. They were already budgeted for. In actual fact, we'd even advanced so far as installing those services. So the request to then use the funding on other informal settlements was informed by the fact that we cannot go and spend money on what was already done. And we even gave commitment that the money would be spent in line with the grant framework conditions, which means that it must be spent in the upgrading of informal settlements. And the intention is not to deviate from that. We made suggestions that we would like support to roll over the funds so that we can commence with spending that money in upgrading of informal settlements, given that the 16 is already budgeted for. So that is really the context of the 16 informal settlements. And indeed, on the PRASA funding, as it relates to the acquisition of the land, yes, 15 million was sent back so that the acquisition of the additional land parcel could then be undertaken by the Housing Development Agency, bearing in mind that the conditions of the grant and the letter that we had received stipulated that it should be for PRASA and for upgrading of informal settlements. And in terms of the Section 21 of DORA, read in conjunction with the Circular 123, MFMA Circular 23 from National Treasury, paragraph 8.2 specifically, is very clear on the conditions for rollovers, that you may only apply for a rollover if you have contractually committed project and it's spent in line with the grant purpose and objectives rather, which is the upgrading of informal settlements grant. Thanks, Chair and Honourable Members.
Right, thank you very much. Thanks, Honourable Samia. Oh, sorry, I think the gentleman behind you wanted to... Oh, I saw you, Michael. Yes, sir?
Thank you, Chair. Kumlani Mulao from the Housing Development Agency.
Okay.
It's a very pertinent question, which is stating where to from here. One of the things that our colleagues from Public Works would love for them to entertain is the revisit around the discussion of the release of Itamba Labs, particularly Farm 981, which is a total extent of 136 hectares. We were requesting 80 hectares of those. In your presentation, you will see that you are outlining the 23 hectares, which is in utilizations for the police quarters, as well as the shooting range in the southwest corner. We've even given the user department recommendations of where we could possibly relocate the shooting range. There's an AXA land parcel, which is just over 500 hectares, and because of environmental sensitivities, we can only utilize 30 hectares of that particular parcel of land. So that's a discussion we would like for the department to please support us in. It will not only address the Prasa Central Line, but the entire southern housing decanting needs for the southern corridor. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you very much. Honourable Chairperson, and the colleagues, Deputy Minister, the Chair of the Board, and various representatives of the Department, the Deputy Mayor. The scenario for me is, having listened from the presentations, when I got into the presentation by the Deputy Mayor, I was led into believing that I can close the meeting. The meeting can be closed. Because when you arrive at that presentation, it carries the spirit of support and commitment to solve the problems which relate to resettlement of various communities in the city. But when I got into the HDA presentation, I got a different angle and scenario, which then brings me back to the Deputy Mayor. The Deputy Mayor, could you please reflect, now that you've had the presentation from the HDA, which highlight a number of instances which relates to bottlenecks, which are primarily your responsibility in terms of the implementation protocol, which you're party to, which relate to matters which you have reflected on. When you are making reference to Section 68, which the city could not support, whether it relates to various prescripts, which are so somewhat instructing on the leveraging of the availability of such funding, which has been made in relation to such settlements. What then is the response of the city on those cardinal matters which relate to the actual realization of the settlement in as far as those people who are in the rail line as part of a reflection? And secondly, looking into the presentation of the city, there's a clear indication there in terms of the structural outlook and expected intent on the implementation of the program. That signed agreement as one of the legal instruments which prescribed various entities which have committed themselves into action. Not only the matter of support this, we support that, and in terms of basic action to make those things successful and to provide necessary actions to ensure that those things are somewhat met. At the city having heard what has been said, what is its own commitment to ensure that there is a realization of such a requirement in terms of acquisition of those identified parcels of land? And your commitment was as well direct to say
if there's a possibility of a direct interaction, so the facilitation of such should come in a more viable, quicker way. I'm not sure that you're saying if such could come through your own offices in terms of facilitation, so that those things which ought to happen with a legal hand are somewhat as well looked into to facilitate the speed in terms of resolving those matters. But where I'm sitting, I see the city as creating a number of stumbling blocks in terms of realization of such settlements, rather than practically assisting the resolution of such matters. I've highlighted the question that relates to Section 68, which requires the city as an obligated entity to look into such a kind of instrument, as an instrument available to access even the level of funding and to ensure that the actual acquisition is somewhat needed. I've looked into your statements and what the city has done in terms of the success factor, the objective, the strategy, as it pertaining to the rail line improvement and the actual benefit thereafter. What is the existing hindrance in terms of what is lost to the communities in less than sense, and what could be the benefit to the GDP in as far as the city is concerned, if functionality of the rail lines is somewhat a frustrated, which is hugely top into your own economic strategy to contribute around the matters which are closer to the poor who are ought to benefit in as far the resuscitation of that line is concerned. The failure of meetings today, those who are part of the committees which are supposed to look into the functionality of such areas, because I think in your, in your slides you indicate that meeting attendance very poor, often cancelled, not correcting. Last meeting was only in November 2022 of the Implementation Protocol Steering Committee. If there is failure by the accounting officers to observe the actual structure, in as far as it relates to their functionality, decision taken, if these meetings don't sit, it tells us to the DGs which are here, their failure is as well working closer into lack of implementation that we see here today. So it's very vital that we must as well be able to meet these kinds of issues which relate to these matters. Because I'm taking this as a legal instrument which empowers the parties to work through it and to fulfill that. Why are you, as accounting officers, are you making these kinds of programs to fail through your absence, through your own commitment, through your failure to attend these meetings, which are very critical on these matters? And if you look into the last meeting which was held in March in 2023, last meeting was sitting now today in July. But I'm talking about land acquisition. The last meeting only was in March, which talks into your own commitment, various department signatories to the implementation protocol. Your failure to observe these kinds of meetings, you are part to blame, you see, because you're not going to meet the actual factor where the commitment has been made, even by the Minister of Transport, to say come December, the line will be busy in terms of the budget implementation processes. Cape Town City, the technical work stream, has been given responsibilities. Those responsibilities amount to two related matters. One matter relates to land and planning, which is led by the City of Cape Town.
If that is the case, around 11:30, it's not a matter of observation. It's not a matter of just support. It's a matter of effectively working towards ensuring that the land which has been identified, the application of existing legislation, the rules for to observe, bottlenecks, it's a responsibility of the city of Cape Town. If there's a failure to do that, because if you look at the technical work stream, therefore the city of Cape Town amounts to fail around that matter, which ought to be facilitated to ensure that those things somehow succeed. Implementation, which is led by the city of Cape Town, no one else. So it's not a matter of support, it's a matter of doing it, a matter of implementing in as far as technical work stream is concerned. If there is no or the failure in terms of that technical related work, that work stream falls off. So if you look into those functional areas, it's 2 out of 5 of those functional areas, and the city is responsible for such. And then if there's a failed plan around such, it says that the city's strategic observation of that intent creates a problematic area. And lastly, from the side of the city, if you look into the progress made on assisting PRASA and HDA with relocation, there's a second last slide which relates to leading social engagement and community consultation in program planning and implementation. And on the side, the city remains committed to facilitate social engagement in conjunction with HDA. Commitment alone, in terms of the actual boots on the ground, ensuring that facilitation works in accordance with the streams as identified. If there is no coupled work around such, the things are going to be problematic. Meetings were held with the HDA, community leaders, ward councillors, staff councils, city officials, and PRASA in Philippi and Landa. Is there any program which seeks to affect the actual outcome in as far as consultation is concerned? When I was dealing with matters of performance, if a person writes a meeting was held, what does it mean? It's not performance. It does not equate to performance. You must stipulate what were the outcomes in terms of those kinds of engagements. You can't be firmly organizing meetings for the sake of organizing meetings. They can be 20, they can be 30, but they must be somewhat supported by outcomes and all. It's like a spending money for the sake of spending that money, but you must be able to fulfill the required levels of ensuring that there is an outcome that has been somewhat felt around those areas. Lastly, to the department. Housing. An amount of 111 was sent to the city. Any money, of course, which is sent to any individual, looking into your own pocket, there are stipulated requirements for fulfillment, which must account on such. 50 million rand is put aside for purchase of land. Getting out of this meeting today, is that money available for land parcel purchases? Because the AGA is saying money must be made available. And if indeed there is requirement necessarily, Department of Housing was saying that there is money available to support housing parcels purchases if they follow certain trend in terms of specification of that land grant. Meaning, therefore, working with the city, that could somewhat happen. Is that the case? Is that the level of working towards that require both hands? My assumption, the city and the Department of Housing
in terms of finalization of money to be availed around what is required around those matters. It looks like, Chair, we're talking about a long-term settlement that passes. PRASA here today says to us, we have pieces of land for temporary usage where we can take communities who are today on the rail line and put there transitionally for them to be located into permanent areas of land. So are we getting out of this room today saying all the parties who are signatories into the implementation protocol commit themselves to avail those permanent land parcels, as the HDL presentation, which is shown a brilliant application and standard of ensuring that such pieces of land are available. So that when you go to committees tomorrow, you tell them that land is going to be made available, so go to the temporary located site, and the committed entities are working towards solving the permanent relocation from those temporary sites. Because that's what we need to ensure that the rail line is open, and come December, come March, there is visible progress there, which is somewhat needed. I was looking into a number of press cuttings. You see, whether it's on the engineering side, the commitment of the city around such, the city strategy in as far as the rail transport network is concerned, and all those kinds of statements. If you say yes, we want those things to be somewhat rolling out as committed, let's make it happen. And it's not a matter of stories. And let us ensure that those communities are taken off the rail line and the city to benefit out of the running trains in the city going forward. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Excuse me. Right, can we get responses to those issues raised? And then, okay, if Mahmoud is not back, Mazambani will come in.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, so I hope I've noted all the clarity points raised early on, and I'll try my best to cover all of them. But Chair, I want to thank you for commenting on the bit more detail into what expanded on what I've said early on in the presentation. And I also really want to reflect on our comfort day conversation where I offered to send all the letters drafted by the Mayor and the Ministers and Sir to the Committee Secretariat. So the committee can have their own line of sight of the timeline that was presented here today, and will give some clarity on and some context to what Pilar also mentioned earlier on, Chair. Chair, so I've got 10 points here, so I will try and be as quick as I possibly can. So I think with regards to, I thank you that the commitment that we have demonstrated in the city of Cape Town, and hopefully you've observed my presentation is recognized, that remains so. That's why we are here. That's why we are keen to fulfill our obligation as listed in the IP. The question that was asked with regards to actual boots on the ground and what are we doing, we have our informal settlement department has offered services to, you know, their experience in relocating communities when sites have been unlawfully occupied. Our sub-councils is also a substructure of council where we're also on the ground and engaging. It's a very important engagement. The outcome of that particular engagement is to ensure that all interested and affected stakeholders are informed. There are lots of narratives that are being peddled around in the communities, and some of those narratives paralyzed the previous Section 868 applications as well. So it was really important that we as responsible stakeholders listed in the IP, that we go out to those communities and inform them exactly what the collective intention is to remove the unlawful occupiers. But Chair, if compliance, thank you for making reference to the rule of law, and I don't think we should interpret compliance with the rule of law as a stumbling block. We know exactly where that has gotten us in certain sectors of our country. Compliance is important. And Pilar also mentioned that early on with regards to the rollover. We want those funds to be rolled over for the reasons listed in the letter that the committee will receive, but we have to do it within the prescripts of the legislation. That, if you have a magic wand that we can wave, please let us know where to procure the wand. We gladly procure quite a few because we know our government's bureaucratic processes does negatively, unnecessarily delay services that we need to deliver to our most vulnerable. But Chair, the two work streams that we are the lean with regards to land identification and spatial planning as the regulatory authority. It was clear early on, and the other presenters also made the remarks, there were initially 12 parcels of land identified, and the most viable options have now been presented by the respective leads in the presentations. And we were very much part of that land identification, and which are the most viable options as well. And the spatial planning, as the in this context, as the regulator, that is the portfolio that I am politically responsible for in the city of Cape Town, we remain committed to ensure that we will follow our reform. But Chair, what the issue is here, and I think one or two comments were made about the type of application. We were actually here today to recognize, as per the prescripts of legislation section 68, that this does not meet the criteria to be emergency relocation intervention. If you were to ask me, Eddie, what is the biggest impasse, I will submit to this committee that's the impasse. That the provisions, as mentioned earlier by HDA colleagues, only allows for the suspension of the land use for a period of 180 days. This is not, and may Chair just allow me to read the prescripts in the legislation. And section 68.1 says, in this section, unless the context indicates otherwise, emergency housing means temporary housing required for households whose homes are uninhabitable as a result of a disaster situation caused by rain, flood, wind, fire, earthquake, accident, or any other circumstance sufficient in nature and scale to result in widespread homelessness, and where the damage or the threat to homes cannot be rectified without temporary relocation and the households cannot be rehoused on that site during the rectification. And that's why we can't consider an emergency application, because it does not meet the prescripts of section 68.1. And so we are strongly arguing the case, and this is where our desire to unblock whatever needs to be unblocked is. A formal application needs now to be submitted. It can only be submitted if you've acquired land, and we've heard that the land has been acquired. We've heard power of attorney has been also secured. We didn't have a rezoning application. So we can't move without a formal application. And unless anyone, argues otherwise and presents evidence that we have received a rezoning application, then we can't move an inch. That's where the impasse is, Chairperson, through you. And I also wanted to comment on the implementation protocol and also reflect on the obligation that all of us have as asset owners. And I think if we look at what has transpired during COVID and also linked to what Pilar mentioned early on, we've already got a pipeline of projects where we now need to remove unlawful occupiers. During COVID, we have in the city of Cape Town alone, we've seen an amount of 858 settlements, just under 300,000 structures. So we recognize that. So we are now programming to respond to that and how we as an asset owner where our public land has been invaded, what we need to do to remove those unlawful occupiers and accommodate them elsewhere. So that's what we're doing already. So when we're saying we've got a program already planned, we can assist, we will have to make application for additional funds because we're already going this direction to respond to our contextual realities that we face as an active owner and obligations that we have. But again, Chair, I think we should not interpret complying with the rule of law as a stumbling block. Very important question, what is the impact of a non-functional rail service? I think I've made that remark early on. It has an impact. And I'm not talking about the economic imperative in a growing economy. The impact of those most vulnerable in Mitchell's Plain and in Khayelitsha. So I don't think we need to delve into deeply into that. That is evident for all of us in the room to observe. And the fact that people are paying at least 3 to 4 times more per month to get to an employment opportunity. I commented on Section 68 and that it relates to suspension of land use provisions made in that category of the zoning category. And again, want to appeal that compliance with the law should not be interpreted as a stumbling block. And if we need to procure a magic wand and we can suspend all of this, please let me know, and we're happy to do that. So it can happen as of yesterday. And I think it should also, we don't subscribe to the narrative that we are creating these stumbling blocks, Chair. The prescripts of the legislation is there for everyone to read and comply with, and it does not exclude government from complying with the respective processes. But Chair, I wanted to comment on the Stock Road land that was mentioned early on. What was not mentioned, that land is currently an initiation site. So we know, I think everyone knows what an initiation site is, so that's what it's used for. One. Two, it's right next to the pylon, so we've got the servitudes running, overhead servitudes running there as well. So those are also additional risks pertaining to the Stock Road site as well. So that means that we'll just further delay conversations with those stakeholders to first of all get them off and to see what else, where else on the site that we can accommodate them there, Chair. But Chair, so if I may conclude by saying this, and this is probably what we all need clarity on, and this is our view sort of Cape Town, the next steps, and what are those steps, Chair? And again, it was mentioned eloquently early on, we need to acquire the land. We've got one site. The next step, when you now have acquired the land, submit a zoning application. These processes we can't wish away. And if the land requires environmental impact assessment, that also has implications on its own. We will do whatever we do internally to hastily and speedily respond to the application and have line of sight of it. The team is ready and waiting. So without an application, we can't respond and fulfill our second IP obligation, the spatial planning work stream, or responsibility rather. And then of course, those are the first steps. Without those steps, without an application, and without consensus that this does not meet the prescripts of Section 68.1, we will be going around in circles forever and ever and ever and ever. But we need to ensure that we acquire the land and make a zoning application, Chair. Chair, I hope I've covered most of the points. If not, I'm happy to take some more questions. Thank you
very much. Let's get further responses to any of the issues raised. All right. We'll come back for follow-ups. Acting DG?
Thanks, Chair. Maybe I will start with the IPSC note meeting. I must indicate that the IPC only exists to process issues emanating from the PMC. The PMC has been meeting, and with the changes in the department, that was an issue because the IPSC is chaired by both the DG of Department of Transport and the Department of Human Settlements, but we have engaged with the DG of Transport, and the meeting will definitely see to have taken that point, such a person into that concern into with regards to the 50 million, Chairperson has indicated the 110 million rands was sent to the city of Cape Town. As the deputy mayor indicated, out of that 111 million, they spent 61 million, if I'm not mistaken, Chairperson. And my assumption, if you have 111 million, you minus 61, you are left with 50. And I think that's the 50 that the city of Cape Town has indicated that they will be sending back to the national fiscus because they won't be able to spend. Chair, I'm doing this that my colleagues they're shaking their heads. Our understanding, Chairperson, is that the funding is still with the city of Cape Town. Maybe they will apply for a rollover, unless if we agree on the terms and conditions of the rollover, because the 50 million rand should have been transferred for the relocation of the rail line, informal or proper line, informal settlement, such a person. Thank you.
Look, you know, I hear all the semantic gymnastics. It's very eloquent, but it does not respond to the critical issue, the relocation of the people on the railway lines. In all the responses you give and the flowery what you say, the bottom line is that we are here for one specific purpose. Just thought maybe I should just remind everyone. I've been sitting here, I'm listening to presentations, I'm listening to responses. Members are trying to sort of put you back on track. So please, Jay, this semantic gymnastics at play. The relocation of people. When someone is asking you when you're meeting and so on. But mind, and then we'll come back to Honorable Adeline and Mazamba.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings, honorable members and colleagues. All protocol observed. Chair, let me start by welcoming all the presentations, very beautiful PowerPoint presentations that we made here. And the Chair, let me just ask for indulgence as well. You know, being a new member here, I might not have the necessary diplomatic language that honorable members there have mastered. But I'm not going to be rude, but I'll try to be brutally honest and say things in a manner that are not going to be ambiguous. Firstly, Chair, I'm going to just categorize my input, starting with PLASA. In their input, a couple of things I just wanted to deal with there. Firstly, I just want to get a proper assurance within PLASA that the relocation is going to happen to a place which is not going to be far-flung, a place which is going to have access to transport and all of that. And also I just want to just check whether as they are looking into this, are they talking to transport people like taxis, buses and all that? And also, how far is this thing, these relocations that are intended going from the railway stations or plaza stations, basically? So they don't just take people and throw them into some remote place. So I just want some assurance there. But I also want to welcome the presentation by PLASA in terms of security arrangements, because I can get the sense that there is an integrated approach in terms of the Nyalas and whatever, all the human beings that are there with the big guns, but at the same time they're being erecting
walls to make sure that the rail infrastructure is protected. I really want to commend that, and I want to encourage you to do that, because with what we've just seen in the past few years, indeed, I think we do need those barricaded areas. Train area must be respected. The past few years have been very bad. Then, Chair, to your sentiment, in fact, this is what I wanted to start to say. Having listened to all these presentations, I'm getting somewhat frustrated. I'm getting frustrated because I'm not getting a sense that there is a political will to do the right thing. I'm not getting that sense. I'm just getting a sense of people playing into their strength in terms of understanding the nitty-gritties of this regulation and that regulation, and how I can outplay you with the particular comma which you didn't put, and therefore, because there's no comma there, and therefore this thing cannot happen, because it doesn't meet paragraph A and paragraph D. You know? I mean, if people of South Africa are looking at this on TV and they're saying, but the people sitting in this room, the departments that are in this room, the reason you have them in the implementation team is that they must sit around the table and not try to outsmart each other. Sit around the table and agree that if this needs to happen, you give me this, you give me this, you give me that. You shouldn't have a situation where there is some principal that sits there and holds their hands and says, let me see what you can give me, and let me see how wrong you are, so that I don't give you what you're asking. This is the kind of thing that I'm getting here, that we're just playing with each other. And as we do, people are suffering. I take note, Chairperson, that we take note of the history. So this is not in a vacuum. The areas, if you look at the map that was presented by Prof here, the areas that are affected here are your Mission Bay area, your Nyanga area, your Kailisha area. These are areas of largely your colored and African people. In fact, in my book, colored Africans, but it's a debate for another day. But let's go with the definition that are currently obtained in the law. I never thought that Jefferson, I think there's racism in this whole thing, because it's black people in general that are suffering part of this technicality game that is being played here. That there's no syllabus. I mean, you have a situation here where with the Minister of Public Works, Minister of Public Works, the Constitution, Section 25, Subsection 2A of the Constitution, is very clear in terms of expropriation of public interest or public purpose. One of the two. Both, in fact, are actually at play here. Why is it that we have this minister that is busy working on actions instead of using the law? The Constitution of this country will override. I mean, I hear the Deputy Mayor here telling us about some unconstitutional concept called willing buyer, willing seller. There's no such a thing in the Constitution of this country. If we have a public purpose issue, like we do have, why can't the minister just designate the land? And all the people are here that own these lands and what have you, they are here. And importantly, there's even budget for this. National appropriated 111 million. And we're still playing games here. And Chairperson, I also want to, I'm very disappointed that this is happening here. There's money on the table, there's land on the table, there's officials there just are playing technical games, and people are suffering. And the first project is, yesterday, people were, actually the community was complaining that these people are busy lying. They said this thing would be completed in December. Maybe it would have been completed in December if there was no this miracle around happening yet. But now I can see the thing, section 68, this section 68, that if you know that section 68 is not the right instrument, why don't you just say what it is that people must give you? Why are you waiting and all of this? But Chairperson, already a couple of points. One, I want to call on the Minister of Public Works to implement the constitution expropriation. In fact, some of us believe without compensation. This time around, we even have the compensation for public interest. If you can expropriate, so the minister must not be working on actions. It's got the constitution behind there. So this must happen. Then must be appropriated. We can't just sit in here and hoping for some willing seller. No! There's no hoping for a willing seller. Then must be identified and it must be appropriated. We even have money for it. That's the first thing. Secondly, Chair, I want to argue that the city of Cape Town must be red carded for unauthorized expenditure. That 101 million that was given to them was given to them for a specific purpose. The purpose was cluster relocation program related, not from for any other informal settlement that you find for any other reason anywhere. It was for cluster relocation program, and this amount for this amount, but all of that was spelled out from day one. And I can even see from the discussion there today that the acting DG of human settlement is actually hearing some of this information for the first time with some of us here, that in fact the city of Cape Town uses discretion to use this money for other things in the so-called 16 informal settlement areas. Those other things were not part of the 101 million allocation. So I'm worried that national gives 101 million budget for a specific purpose related to the plaza allocation, but the money gets used for general informal settlement issues. That, in my book, is unauthorized expenditure, and I'm calling for that to be declared and the financial misconduct to be pronounced on the people that are responsible for using money for purpose which it was not allocated for. Also, Chairperson, I hear some lousy excuse here that some of the land that was identified belongs to staffs or defense force for training and what have you. And by the looks of things, it appears to me that this land is the land that is in and around town and so on. And we hear that people could not be put in this other outland place, but this nearer one is spoken for. Now the question is, why is it such a difficult decision to make to say police, you want to train, you want to exercise the rifles and everything, you are the one that must go to the farmland area. Why is that a difficult decision to make? Why can't those police that want shooting range? Why is the shooting range in the middle of a city? Why is the shooting range in the middle of in the radius area of a commerce where people should be? Why don't you take them to the farmland area so that the place can be made available for people to live and for people to be able to do what they need to do? This to me again talks of public works' inability to make a proper political decision, as it were. And the condition is behind this thing because it's for the public good. So, Chairperson, I think I'm going to end there.
Let me just see if I've left any areas there. Yeah, no, no. I think I'm going to end the chairperson with I'm very concerned sitting here. I think the people of South Africa have been given a raw deal for no reason. The department sitting here can resolve this whole thing in one day. One day, they can resolve it, but there's no political will. Public Works must make the decision that they must make, must appropriate. And the city of Cape Town must understand that willing buyer, willing seller is not constitutional, no constitutional imperative or obligation to do that. When there's public good, when there's public purpose to be done, when there's public interest, decisions must be made. Constitution allows this. This is not an arbitrage. It's done under the Constitution. So why is the Constitution suspended in Cape Town? I have a problem with this. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let's get responses to that. Honourable Lees, will come in. Deputy Mayor.
Chair, just a point of clarification, correction. The 61 million rand has not been spent. I think we were clear that the 50 million has been returned to national, so the implementing agency, HTA can negotiate to acquire those parcels of land. The correspondence that I referred to early on asked the most recent letter, asked the minister to give clarity by the 19th of June this year, based on the other settlements we've identified, because we've already funded and budgeted for those settlements that the minister identified in the initial letter. And we also in the letter wrote to the minister, in the event that we don't receive a response by the 19th of June, we will then at a special council meeting on the 20th of June have the funds tabled there to be rolled over as per the prescripts of the Municipal Financial Management Act. So that has happened, so not necessarily, it's not premature to assign a red card to the City of Cape Town, but the funds have been allocated to our next financial year's budget. Nothing has been spent there yet, because we were trying to see clarity from national, could it be rolled over for those identified areas. Thank you, Chair.
Rachel, I understand that on the 20th, the decision was taken to roll over.
So the council? Yes, and the special council will attend to the chair.
All right. DPWI, then we'll come to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to just maybe make a few comments based on Honorable Manu's submission. As the Public Works Department, we do actually expropriate land. We have in the past year expropriated 23 properties for the purposes of HESCOM to reduce the servitude. So if a department, we are a reactive department in the sense that if the HDA, along with another department, they are struggling with a particular seller, that is when they come back to us, that we say, then we need this land to be expropriated and then we can take action. But in this case, I'm getting the sense that there was a willing buyer, willing seller, and they were able to conclude the transaction. But if we are requested land and we provide land and this land is deemed not suitable, and I agree with you on the issue of subs, Honorable Manu, that we could put subs in a more flung area. But at the time when subs presented their say, but we still have this thing going on, there were other options that were available that were then followed. My colleague re-emphasized that for phase two, they need that land, and we are committing now that we are going to then have the conversation with SAP for them to be the ones to move outside. So we're not fighting in that front. We're actually in agreement and moving towards the same direction. But I just wanted to clarify, Chairperson, we do expropriate when expropriation is required. Thank you.
Colleagues, this I just indicate because the majority of here and my focus is here, and I'm also reading faces. CEO?
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Vanya, just to clarify, when you refer to the PRASA from outside the relocation, that is a temporary relocation that we were presenting on, and that is still within the rail reserve, so it's in fact just adjacent to Stock Road Station. I think your question is also about the longer term, about the far-flung areas and so forth, and I think the colleague did respond, but I'm sure HA can come in. In terms of the identification of this land, one looked at the radiuses within the affected areas. so that in terms of access to transport, I think it's critical also for Prasa. Generally, these are our commuters in terms of maintaining the patronage. But I think the issue around the transport plan and the radiuses around the affected areas, I'm sure HDA can expand on that. Thank you.
HDA?
Thank you, Chair. Even in the program on our presentation, you would have seen that should we have relocated people within the school year, we had made provision for transportation for the scholars as well as the workers. Some of the land parcels that we've identified are along shopping main routes where taxis are running and schools, so we did not want to displace people. For example, the Itemba labs that we're making reference to is directly across from the Khayelitsha, so we did not want to displace people and break those social fabrics that are currently existing. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Right, Honourable Liz, Honourable Hutt, have a standby.
Mr. Chairman, a great deal has been said, but you know, the when one makes the innuendo, we expect a retort, and so it is with great pleasure that I see that the Deputy Minister is wearing a blue suit today. And a red tie, that's disconcerting, Mr. Chairman, very disconcerting. Mr. Chairman, it's clear that this whole structure, this formal structure that was put together, isn't functioning as it should function. I don't think there's anyone who can argue that it is. And trying to allocate blame is we can't do it in this meeting. I mean, everyone has their own positions, rightly or wrongly, and I'm not going to get into a discussion about who's right and who's wrong. The point is that we've got to get a job done, we've got to do it within the prescripts of the law, whether we like it or not, but we do it today, not tomorrow. That's the key. And this thing just drags on and on and on. And Mr. Chairman, the sad thing about this is that none of this would be necessary if the Minister of Transport, the PRASA board, the PRASA executive at the time had done their jobs. None of it would be necessary. And so if you then take that to its logical conclusion, just the fencing on the central line is, I think, Hashim, going to cost 1.5 billion rand, is what you suggested it was going to cost. If one were to take all the money that we're now going to spend fixing the malfeasance of the PRASA board executive, the Minister of Transport at the time, the DG of Transport at the time, and taken that, we could have put all these people in shacks into rather nice houses. But instead, we're sitting here now debating how are we going to find some money to just rehouse them in circumstances which probably none of us in this room would like to live under. And yet, not one of the people who caused this problem in the first place has yet been held accountable. Not one. They've gone off into the sunset with their big packages and they are sitting comfortable somewhere. Mr. Chairman, it's outrageous, but at the end we sit here and the group behind me and in front of me, well, get on with the job now. As unfortunate, and some are, and some aren't. And it's absolutely pointless trying to point fingers at each other. Take the points that each of you make about what your particular restrictions are and work within them and get the job done. Get the job done. Listen to each other. Mr. Chairman, just be looking for parcels of land. Cape Town and this part of the world has a sea, it has mountains, it has very little land. Why are we not looking at high density housing? Why are we looking for big parcels of land to relocate people to? There's no short-term solution here, Mr. Chairman. Quite clearly, there's no short-term. No matter what the price of program is, there's no short-term solution in terms of housing the people. There's a short-term solution, perhaps, in temporary relocations. And Prato have done a certain amount of work in that direction, and I think the City of Cape Town has supported. Please tell me if the city hasn't supported you in your temporary relocation. That's a temporary solution. The long-term solution is what people who have illegally, by the way, invaded the railway lines are looking for. And if I was one of those people, I'd also be looking for a long-term solution. I wouldn't like to be told, well, you can go to whatever that railway yard is, but sometime in the future we may find something more permanent for you. I would also say, hang on, I want to know what the permanent solution is. And so, Mr. Chairman, HDA, Department of Human Settlements, why are we not looking at high-density housing? It doesn't have to be the Moscow kind of communist concrete blocks with cardboard walls. No one's saying that. I don't know if any of you have ever been to one of those buildings. It's horrific. But that's not what we're looking for. We're looking for high-density housing, which can be put onto pieces of land close to work opportunities, close to the transport network. Not some distant Stellenbosch site. Although maybe Stellenbosch needs people there in their economy. I don't know this part of the world very well. Mr. Chairman, that's the one point. The second point is, Hisham, CEO, we're going to spend 1.5 billion rand on fencing. Is it not perhaps the best way to secure the network? I'm not talking about the stations necessarily, but the network. To put trains on that line every 5 minutes. No one can build a shack in 5 minutes. Isn't that really the answer, is to get this system running full steam? Because not only would that protect the network, but secondly, it'll bring in the passengers and the revenue. Because if you continue with your limited services as you've got now, people are not going to use it because it doesn't suit them. It's like, why do I fly predominantly from Johannesburg to Cape Town? It's because I'm halfway between Durban and Cape Town. Durban flights to Cape Town are very limited. Limited services. I go to Cape, to Johannesburg, flights are up and down all the time. So I try and go from Johannesburg. It's a question of giving the service, and if you don't give the service, you won't get the passengers. Therefore, if you don't get the passengers, you won't increase the level of service. I'm saying to you, increase the level of service in order to get the passengers and to protect the network. I'm not an expert. I wait your telling me what a fool I am, because many people tell me that on a regular basis, and I won't tell you who does. Henry's not sitting on my right. Mr. Chairman, don't look at me like that, because when you look at me like that, you're saying to me, get on with it, get over it now. I can see your, I've learned to read your expression. Mr. Chairman, the question of Transnet came up yesterday at Langa, and so I'd like to know, where is Transnet in this process? I don't see them listed anywhere, and yet their infrastructure has been built on. Have they abandoned that property? Does anyone know? Maybe the Deputy Minister of Transport might, but he's not. Yeah, Transnet is your thing, isn't it? No, it's public enterprise. Oh, that's my favourite one. But Mr. Chairman, what has there been any attempt to involve Transnet in this in this process. Mr. Chairman, I think that, let me leave it at that, but let me emphasize that we can sit here, we can say who should have done what, but the need is to say this is what we're going to do by this day, and everyone to agree that it's possible and legal. Possible and legal, not just possible, anything's possible. If you want to go ahead and stop a vehicle on the road as a deputy president's VIP unit and beat them up and kick them and do all sorts of things and drive away, it's possible, it's not legal.
Thank you very much. Let's get responses to that, and then Honourable Hattab will come in. Honourable Sawyer, stand by. CEO?
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Lee, thanks for those questions. I think the one that you're raising, and I want to start with that, is around getting to a full service. And that is certainly the objective. I think for many reasons. One, you are correct, when you've got your trains running frequently, it's a huge deterrent in terms of threats to your assets. But then you also need to run them 24 hours a day. So I think we still do have the challenge of when trains are not running, that you need to have a security plan in place and integrated strategy. But I fully agree with the notion that the full service would certainly have an impact in terms of access to the network. So that's the first point, and that is the key objective. By no means is the objective of Prasa to run a limited service. I think the impact on the economy, the sustainability of the rail service, all comes into question if that is the approach. So I just want to make that point up front. The issue around the walling, because it's quite correct. I mean, it comes at admittedly quite a huge cost that we're talking about. But we got to this point having looked at employing various other walling or fencing technologies, which were not effective. You've moved from the Palisades to the clear view, to brick walls, and we found in virtually all of those cases, these walls are still vandalized, it was still penetrated, so to speak, in terms of accessing the network. We've got to a point now where we are talking, in some cases, not the entire corridor, but the higher risk areas, concrete walling, and then in other areas, military grade fencing. So this is what is being looked at in terms of securing those reserves. I think the issue of value for money is an exercise that the team has applied during this process in terms of what we can roll out. The point that you are making, and I want to touch on this, is getting on with the job, which is quite important. And you will see that, hopefully from the presentation that we delivered earlier, it's precisely that we are trying to do. Even with waiting for this permanent and long-term solution, we are getting on with the job by trying to do temporary intervention. From the site visit, you were seen yesterday that we were really quite contracted, awarded for the phase two. And it's under trying circumstances, we must mention this, that there's no contingent getting onto the job when you've got all these risks and threats. But if we know the impact of central line, not just for the city, but for rail in general, we cannot be relaxed around this one. So that is fully supported around proceeding, and our approach is at the moment, you can quite clearly see we are getting on with the job, even though it's still with a limited service. But hopefully when the long-term solution is then in place, we can recover the full corridor. And that must be the objective. If we cannot recover the full corridor, when we're talking about the 40% and more on that corridor, it's going to be compromised, the bottom line. So it's critical that we get that I would support if this can be resolved in one day, it must be done. But that is the urgency we need around getting this back. And then just lastly, there are the other questions around what happened in the past, and I think for me, as I'm looking forward, what we must do, those issues must be addressed and that you are raising, but I'm not going to respond to those things, Honourable Lee, for this session. Thank you.
I didn't die.
said, when we started the meeting, I was confident and more positive. But as the presentation continued, I got disappointed. We are here, Chair, because we want those that have roofs in the railway line to be relocated. Two, we want the parcel of land to be identified. The third aspect, we want time frames with milestone projections on how are we going to get there. We are all privy to the circumstances that led us to be here. Dwelling on the past is also going to assist us to move those people. And quite frankly, I'm not interested in the past. The reason why we convene all of you here is to have a solution to move forward. We have signed the implementation protocol check. It says accordingly, parties have agreed to conclude the implementation protocol to facilitate resettlement of the household currently residing on the Plaza rail networks. We have all committed to do that. And there are duties and responsibilities assigned to each stakeholder. The city, we must facilitate the identification of land in consultation with provincial department of human settlement and HDA required for the program implementation. That's what we have committed to. HDA as an implementing agent also has a responsibility to also do the same. We have not here in this platform told us that we have done 1, 2, 3 in this identification of this land. The city is saying we are now hearing that there's a terminus. And where were you in terms of your facilitation of identification of that land? You are saying you have not received the rezoning application yet in terms of your rules of engagement. It says, Chair, okay, I want to read properly so that we get a sense of who's supposed to do it, even though they know. Expeditiously consider all land use and related application relating to the program. Implementation of basic agent and exceptional emergency circumstances occasioned by this program. So if there are issues related to rezoning land use, you have a responsibility to inform your counterpart that consider doing this concurrently. Let's work together in doing the same. You can't therefore say because they have not done it, you're not going to assist them. You have signed and you have committed yourself to do the same. And you have also committed to identifying all bottlenecks in relation to all these applications. Now, I think, Chair, we need to give them 2 weeks to do what they meant to be doing. If there is a land, timber left have been identified, you must come back here within 2 weeks and tell us what have you done to ensure that land is suitable and all the law processes and legislative requirements that goes with ensuring that land is used for the particular purpose. Do that, City of Cape Town, do that HDA. Don't come to this meeting and say we're waiting for them to apply. What are you doing to assist them to apply? The most important and critical part is that I need to also emphasize that South Africa belongs to all who live in it, black or white. We have done away with group areas. We can't afford a situation where there's a section of the community that has a phobia of receiving other communities. It is an incumbent upon us as lawmakers and public representatives to stress the importance of integrating within our communities. We can't because those that have money are willing to take us to court and say they don't want these ones to come next to us and then say we can't do anything, let's look for another land. Then we're not true to the Constitution of the Republic. We can't. Cape Town is not a republic of the city of Cape Town. It is part of South Africa.
integrating of communities is our key and primary responsibility in ensuring that the Rainbow Nation is realized. If those receiving communities have issues, as you have alluded to, in terms of security, engage with the Minister of Police to beef up security, engage with the Provincial Commissioner, engage with the City of Cape Town, Metro Police and law enforcement to ensure that their concerns are addressed. Don't run around when there is a piece of land and treat these receiving communities as people who are having phobia of some sort. It can't be. I have not had any attempts to sit down and address the concerns of those receiving communities. For once, I think I agree with Honorable Mani. There must be expropriation without compensation if push comes to shove. Madam, you're saying you do expropriate when there's a need. What you're telling me is that there is no need at this point in time. Is that what you're saying? You said you expropriate when there's a need. I want you to tell us that there is no need at this point in time to expropriate. All of us agree that rail central line is critical and it contributes 40%. Now, why are we at this point in time have not seen the need to change gears and act as if this business is unusual? Some of us, this matter is very personal. We have lost our close friends in that central line, yet the trains are not moving. Maybe to you, it's just another job and a responsibility that will ensure that you earn a salary. To us, it has even became more personal than any other thing, because we have lost lives. Others are sitting with their limbs having bullets in them. But we come here and play political games instead of resolving the situation. I'm requesting, Chair, that let's give all the parties concerned 2 weeks to come up with a detailed implementation plan of ensuring that if indeed it's timberless, from today until that 14 days, we must receive a detailed program of action. How are we going to solve those identified bottlenecks? How are we going to ensure that the rezoning is done? If the city does not have an appetite to consider this as an emergency, there is a standing eviction order that has been extended 3 times. And November 2023 is going to lapse. If that's not an agent measure, I don't know what it is. People have been killed. If that's not an emergency, I don't know what emergency is. So this thing of hiding behind the law to circumvent doing other things is not going to work with some of us. There must be a political will. If you have to apply for exemption, do so. We can deviate in other instances. There is provision for deviation and applying for exemption. These are not 10 commandments. These laws are not rigid. This is it. Thou shalt not steal. We can't change that. We don't know who's the author of those 10 commandments. But for these policies, we are responsible for that. I am appealing to all the parties concerned, Chair, that let's walk the talk, let's demonstrate by our actions that indeed we are committed to implementing these programs of relocating our people, recovering the central line, protecting those that are working in ensuring that this program becomes a success. I'm closing, so I'm not going to ask any questions, but I'm making a proposal that within 2 weeks, if it were up to me, I would say 7 days.
Thank you very much. I'll check there's a reaction to that. Just to Chair, there's lots of comments made. I would like to respond to the clarity of what are we doing to assist. And I think I've covered that before, but maybe it's just useful to reiterate again. there's been interaction with our local districts to guide the HDA colleagues what is required as part of the rezoning application, because they have power of attorney, so those engagements are there. And until we receive a formal application, it's extremely difficult to comment on an application and process an application if we don't have one. So I just wanted to make that point. Agree with the Honourable Member that South Africa belongs to all, and we also agree with that Cape Town is not a republic on its own. I think we've been very clear on that, unlike a certain party that believes it should be, but we believe it be a part of this beautiful country that we all live and reside in, Chairperson. And I know the frustrations with regards to just another job. I take that as a frustration and not the reality by all the team members that are part of this engagement. And I'm going to come back to my earlier remark, Chair, about the next steps. It's a type of application. We should not be wasting any time to pursue this as per an emergency application, Chair. We have to agree that a normal acquisition with this expropriation with compensation is an option. In this context, there was a willing seller. Then we have power of attorney. We must start with that, with those processes as of yesterday. So to the Honourable Member, whether it's 7 days, whether it's 2 weeks, it's highly unlikely that you're going to get your answer without an application submitted. Because as Cape Town, we can't respond until we get an application. We need an application. And I know I sound like a stuck record, but that's how we fulfill obligation too with regards to the spatial planning process. And we need to see this. And also the rezoning, it affords that parcel of land the necessary rights. So whether the receiving community, and depending on the typologies that we all agree on, the receiving community can oppose all of those developments, but if there's rights assigned to it, it's highly unlikely that it will stop the development. So I just want to make that remark, Chairperson, of course if it's desirable in that zoning category as well. But Chair, but there are just some remarks that I want to make. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Chair, to you.
I
do not want to interject to the Honourable Deputy Mayor. I just want clarity. Have you requested the application? And two, why have you not submitted the application? Those are the questions that I ask.
Right. HDA?
Yes, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think in the spirit of moving forward, maybe let's try and avoid some of it and we just get to a little assistance. Chair,
that's precisely why you're here.
Yes.
And Chair, precisely why this meeting was called.
Was called
because you've not moved.
Yeah.
And it's clear why you're not moving, listening to all that has been said here.
Yeah, Chair, let me just give a context so that there's an understanding maybe from our side. One is that we have done a feasibility study in a number of land parcels, and then the way issues that we identified where they were saying that the receiving community is not going to be accepting of those people, and purely from our side with the interest of moving forward. We then look also at Timberlands, and then we've done the feasibility there also, and then we can safely say that from what we've done, the place is feasible to relocate them for human human settlement. The challenge that we need to talk to, and maybe that is where the Deputy Mayor should come in, is that once we start going back, Deputy Mayor, and saying that when we do the application, we should not do it as an emergency. I think that is where, for me, the issue is, because that, for me, is what determines the moving forward or not moving forward. Because if we don't then do it as an emergency, then it takes 18 months or more to then go through the process of the... and then what we are saying here is that, remember, the 18 months is going to then render the whole process useless from where we sit in terms of wanting the rain to continue, you know, to start working. So for me, I'm saying paperless is feasible. The Department of Public Works have said that they can make it available to us. All what we are asking from the Deputy Mayor and the team is to say, if we are not going to consider it, I mean, it's a bylaw, Deputy Mayor. It's a bylaw, it's not like it's a statute that can move. It's a bylaw of the City of Cape Town. So the City of Cape Town can work around it by law. Those of us as technocrats, we can help each other. We know how it can be done. We've been municipal managers for a long time, some of us. So what we are asking is that can we move on that one chair? If the department has agreed to say they'll make Timberlands available, we are saying as ADA we have done the analysis, the place is suitable for human settlement. All what we are asking for is to say, can the city assist us with the rezoning process to continue quicker than the 18 months? And then I think the whole problem will be resolved. For me, that's just the commitment from the city. Thank you.
All right. Honorable Sewer.
Thank you, Chair. The gentleman from the housing.
HDA.
Yeah, he has actually covered what I wanted to suggest. But if the deputy mayor is saying there is a will to assist, and you keep on saying Section 68 will not pass through because of this and that, you should actually assist in giving ideas in terms of what then should be done to be able to move forward. And just also on a lighter note, that it's true that the former board of CASA took a very immature decision in terms of suspending the security company. And just thinking about what Honorable Mani has said, that I'm also sitting here and thinking that if the invaders had invaded a historically white area, the city would have moved very quickly to remove those people. So you can also just look at it and say it was a question of they let them do whatever they are doing. We don't necessarily care. It's not our land. It has got nothing to do with us. It's far from where we are. Thank you, Chair.
AM. Chair, respectfully, I cannot agree with the last comment. The law is there for everyone, Chair. And I refer to my earlier comments about the obligation of a property owner. You have an obligation as a property owner, and I've made reference to land. City land has been invaded, and our program of action to remedy all of that, and wherever those opportunities are. But if we look in the context of invasion, let's understand also why people invade. And also, sometimes they invade because they're close to an economic opportunity, and that's why they're invading land there. But I can confidently state here, Chairperson, that that's not the case. As also earlier comments made on with regards to race, that we would have acted sooner, that's not the case at all. All that we are saying is, one, there must be consensus on what parcel of land has been identified. Two, the type of application. Three, once we receive an application, we will assist, and the 18-month period most certainly can be truncated, depending on if environmental impact assessments needs to be done. And I also want to make through you, Chair, this point. The fact that we don't agree with the type of application, we are wasting unnecessary time and delays. And then that 18-month period has passed already, and nothing is done. So that's why we need to agree that the Section 68, well, is not going to work for what we're trying to do yet. It has to be a proper development in whatever area that we're looking at, and we must make the application. And you don't have to be on bended knee to ask for our assistance. I've been very clear that that's exactly what we will be doing. We will fulfill our IP obligations. But we can't do that in the absence of an application. Thank you, Jane.
We're going to be settling here. Let me put what I want to say in this, and I'll come to you, colleagues. I said yesterday, Pastor must not come here assuming that we are in a partnership with them as an entity. But we are in agreement. We are in agreement about the fundamental principle that the railway lines must be open. And in signing the protocol, you are making a commitment of teamwork, not of silo operations from your various corners. You are coming together. I'm sitting here and I'm listening to fragmentation, disjointedness, and the lack of cooperation, leading me to no other conclusion other than to say that you have all failed in the implementation of the protocol. You have failed. Because you are assigned the responsibilities to create a sense of cohesion in what needs to be done. All I'm hearing here is, now, if you do this, if you do that, if you do that, I'm not getting a sense of if we do it. That's why earlier on I was saying here, this semantic gymnastics and acrobatics that are going on, of fault finding as opposed to solution finding, is exactly why this program is not moving. So after all is said and done, the point of departure is that I just want all of you to know that we view yourselves as having failed the protocol. No, the central line must be open, we agree, but it's as if you are negotiating now the protocol, trying to re-engineer it and refocus it to achieve other goals and outcomes that we don't know. You know what this will lead us to? It will lead us to the original sin of this matter. The inability to take the correct decisions. Variation orders are coming to an end. You will find you are building irregularity on top of irregularity. I find this to be the most unprofessional working relationship I've encountered in government. This silo mentality, low-hanging fruit games for me and my space, not for the collective protocol that you've signed. Then why are we here? Why did you sign the protocol? Why? Why must requests about things that should have been addressed at protocol level be raised here that, or if you do this, that, why? I mean, what is the whole thing about rezoning? I'm not expecting the city of Cape Town to be saying we are awaiting a rezoning application. I'm expecting that we together are doing a rezoning application. Because of the gravity of the situation. My only conclusion is that the failure of this project has got a benefit down the line for who I don't know at this point. But we have seen this kind of thing of throwing a javelin for yourself. The majority of our people continue to find themselves at the periphery of economic activity. And the linkage to that is the railway. This morning we were speaking about traffic coming here, saying that, oh, the roads are flowing much better because the schools are closed. We've taken 12 million passengers out of the roads. The headache of Cape Town traffic, among others, exists because the railroads are not moving. Because you're bringing everybody here to work here, because that's where the opportunities are. It's just basic common sense that alleviate the traffic headache and congestions by opening up the railway lines to make sure that people are able to move in diversity.
It's the same thing we're complaining about insofar as the contracts are concerned in KZN, the movement of road to rail. Where must we now be subjected to this theoretical outlook of trying to prove each other wrong? Get the job done. Shape up or ship out. This is not acceptable. Just under, it's not acceptable. The longer you sustain what is on the railway, now, the bigger your problems in the future. It is in everybody's collective interest to get those people off the railways. Whether you view it from a governance perspective, from a political perspective, a humanitarian perspective, whatever vantage point, get those people off the railways. The demarcation board is currently sealed now with new walls and so on and so forth. Where are you placing those processes for the purposes of elections? The list is endless of the ripple effect of this indecisiveness and inaction on your part. Yeah, you live here and say, well, whatever, scope or what. But it's an indictment on your collective leadership. And I hope that people see you for what you are. Get the job done. I'm just sitting here just like him, laying in Gwane Gwane. As I'm sitting here, Gwane Gwane. A fairy tale. So, professionals at this level, money is available, but there's no movement. You know, the thing we usually get here is that there's no money. Everybody comes and they say, hey, we want to do this, but there's no money. Yes, 9 months will be tough. 111 million rand. So then, you know, I always hate the notion of babysitting. I hate, but in this case you're going to babysit you. You're going to come here every month until you resolve this thing. Until you resolve it. And you will explain yourselves every time why. The protocol is there. It's 17 pages. Your reporting format will be what have you done in your respective area together. I'm going to make a special application to the House Chairperson to allow for a dispensation for us to meet during the recess period. And I'll advise the ministers as such. There have been numerous complaints. Trusters collapsed, trusters collapsed. What another bailout? There's no money for the bailout, but there's money for the rezoning. Trusters in everybody's interest to generate revenue for the state. To help you with the movement of people involved. It's a long list, it's an economic enabler. And all that is asked is that move people off a railway and put them somewhere, and here's the money for it. I think this is such a basic conversation. I was expecting to come here, which is, we are at this level and we're about to unblock this final thing. This is not the kind of leadership you expect at this level. It's not the kind of indecisiveness you expect at this level. You are sure the kids in the playground in grade 1? Not here. Shape up or ship out. If you are not equal to this task, leave so that those who are can continue with the job. This is about the people and their sustainable livelihood. There's health considerations that on those railway lines. None of us would want to live there. So, but why then must we prolong and sustain people living there? As wrong as they were to have gone there, as illegal as it was for them to have built there, but is this the moment to judge, to say, well, because you should not have been there, suffer? That's not leadership. Temper justice with mercy. Temper corrective action with mercy. Ubuntu. No, I don't usually,
I find this makes me emotional, which is it? When in a sea of complaints that there's no money, here there is money. And you're bungling. I shudder to think what would happen if the statement was there's no money. I don't understand. So colleagues, I just want to, I know that there's follow-ups, I want to make a proposal that we gonna continue with this month on month. And one of that we asked for 2 weeks. I was looking at the program, it may clash with oversight that are planned for other things and other considerations. I'm going to suggest that we reconvene on this meeting on this matter on the 27th of July, subject to approval to get progress as well. If you don't have progress, don't come here. Don't waste the taxpayers' money flying in or driving out. Don't bother. Tell us from wherever you will be that I've not done what I was supposed to do. Then at least we know what we're dealing with. This is not acceptable. It is not acceptable. Yeah. So I'd like to, so that go and find each other, go and chase and make up if you have to on the issues that you had, hug and whatever, if you must. Box each other in the corner if you might, fight, punch each other, bleed and so on and then do whatever you need to do, but then get the job done. Ventilate whatever, debate that there, not here, your political consideration, whatever it is that you need to do it there. But on the 27th, come back with progress. I made a remark to colleagues, you are dealing with a community that's not resistant to move. They say, okay, you're going to end up engineering social unrest and unease with those people which you're not taking them seriously. But then I suppose South Africa thrives on chaos. And this makes it a conducive and enabling environment for politics at the expense of the sustainable livelihoods of the people. It's a serious indictment. Mani, Somyo, Hadebe. Close it off, and then DM will come to you for concluding remarks.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Firstly, I just want to summarize and say I'm calling on the acting DG for Human Settlement to proceed investigating unauthorized expenditure on Western Cape, because this 111 million was appropriated for financial year 22-23. We are now sitting with a situation where 50 million has been returned, and that's 61. There's a lot of if buts and stuff that is not very clear. But bottom line is that 61 million did not go to where the appropriation was made for. So I insist that unauthorized expenditure probe must be made, and if there's any financial misconduct, the relevant officials must be taken through a DC properly. That's one thing. Secondly, in terms of this Section 68 thing, I want to make a point here that South Africa is a unitary state. You are not going to have any kind of legislation at a local level that seeks to undermine a national imperative. If we have a constitution of this country, that's very clear about when to expropriate. There is no local regulation, local law, local bylaw that is supposed to frustrate that. I have to call the National Treasury in this instance, not Treasury, Public Works in this instance, to look into urgent expropriation with or without compensation to ensure, in fact, as I say this, I think it must be very clear that we're dealing here with human beings. People with children that must go to school, people with children that have to have recreation facilities and all of that. We can't have a situation where we're moving people for some intermediate until something what? When we got land here. I want to move that, let's move out from this temporal arrangement Mr. Group CEO Plaza. There should be no temporal arrangement. There must be temporal arrangement in a place where it will eventually be permanent. Not we put you here today, we might see where we put you tomorrow. No. We must put you where we intend to put you, and maybe for the next couple of months it will be temporal because this is pressing and urgent because we need to get the trains going, but we'll eventually settle you there. This is the answer that the people are looking for. This is the certainty that the people are looking for. Not we'll put you there today, and then the question is, and then tomorrow we'll see what we can do. No, people can't go that with that answer. People are not going to move. They're actually invoking violence by planning that way. They're planning for a failure. That's what they're planning for. So we'll have a different kind of problem if we go that way. So I'm moving. That let's identify a land for permanent settlement. Obviously, it will be a phased deal in terms of how that permanency is obtained. But people must know that at least if I'm here, I'm here. Then they can plan their lives. Of course, we're dealing with human beings here. Let's be mindful of that. And in terms of land, first we've got that SAPS one. This should be a given. That one should not be a discussion issue. Police can move as far as they can. They've got bikes, they've got transport, they've got everything. In fact, they have guns that are busy shooting. It might even be safer for them to be as far from people as possible so they don't have stray bullets and all of that. So they must move with the defense force. They must move and go far. I don't know where it must go. But the area there where they are must be for people. And I want also to say that I think you must also start identifying golf courses. Golf courses, that's a vast amount of land that the people are just playing when people are suffering. This is so absurd. It's quite absurd that you have people playing nine fairways and all of that when people haven't got a place to live. What kind of people are we that you've got a place to play golf but you've got no place for people to live? What is the ethics of that? Why is public works seeing it correct not to expropriate a golf course so that you can settle people? So I don't accept this thing of land is not available and all, when we've got so many golf courses here. Convert them and then be done. And then lastly, this 50 million that was returned, I'm not clear why was it actually even returned. And why is the return of that 350 million, why that return on its own did not constitute a reason to expropriate land? Because what I'm reading out of that return is some malicious posture by the city of Cape Town that was given 111 million, and they returned some of that without using it because of what? Racism? Because they couldn't go to land that was too white, or what? What was the problem here? Why did you have to return 50 million? Why was that 50 million not used to buy land somewhere? What was the problem? Why couldn't that 50 million be used for the purpose it was designed for? Why did you take it back and all of that? And I'm still not sure even what that 61 million actually did. Because if that 61 million was neither rolled back nor given back or used for what it was meant for, what exactly did it do? If you say you are still going to cancel for this, for that, we've got cut-offs in the financial planning of government. This is now a different financial year. I'm not sure how this is being treated. Can I just get clarity on that? Because right now it's a bit murky for me. All I know is that there's a 61 million that is not where it should have been. And I hear the deputy mayor does not want to accept that it's unauthorized and all of that. But I'm not clear. Can I just finally get clearance on that? Yeah, but I think I've made the other point. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you much, Honorable Chairperson. I think both from this side and that side of our engagement, probably to avoid reaching the extreme propositions made recently, which are driven by envisage in action. Such views are in the House, happening now in the House. But they are glaring in terms of what might happen outside there because of lack of action. I'm not saying he's wrong, he's right, but that extreme, the very extreme areas of action. So I'm smiling at him deliberately, so I should not respond. That is coming up with very extreme suggestions, which we should guard against if we want to effect favorable development for everyone in South Africa. So he might arise because there's a felt code in terms of acting accordingly. I don't think that's what we want. What we want, through the chair, the deputy representative there, you are wrong. Section 68 carries 9 subsections. 9 subsections. When you read to us after my question on this section 1, you're wrong. You're totally wrong. That section harbors the area of rezoning. What power the city has around that, what power the province has around the matters of planning, what are the consequential form of actions that arise if there are problems in terms of implementation of such. That is an internal process by the city. So you can't come to us and say you are weak, when the city is armed with an instrument which enables you to act on this matter. So it's wrong. So when sitting here wanting to inject action to the parties who are involved here, don't abuse that section. That section covers all elements that relate to the attendance by the city. It's your bylaw, 2015, your bylaw. So we can attend to it. If you don't want to zone because of problems, it gives you the energy, but it gives you limitation. 90 days, absolutely. That's the internal capability which is founded in the law. We can't sit here and say, go back and take the law. That's not our call. Our call is say, act within the law. Do what is right. Assist the process. Speed the process based on your commitment. 9 subsections there. 9 of them. Then you're coming to us with subsection 1, which comes with a definition, which does not roll out actions that could be taken by the city to attend to matters of that nature. So please, if you want to act, if you're committed, as you say, if indeed you take those communities as your communities, you take them as part of your own population, you have and leverage to act. That clarity which is needed from the Department of Housing is clarity which ought to ascertain the availability of such funds for an exposure to HTA to frustrate that process in terms of land purchase, so that Praza, when they come out of this building today, they should set themselves for action in terms of dealing with those matters which relate to
ensuring that the rail line is opened yesterday. That's what we want. That's what we want. I take it as that's what the city wants as a signatory to the ID. So please, ladies and gentlemen, from our side, a call for action is modest. Don't break the law. Don't displace people. Take care of people's interests. Respect their rights. Take them as humans and treat them as such. Open the barriers. Ensure that you open the line for the transportation of the people and the goods. Make the life in the city of Cape Town easy. That's the call of action. That's our call. Please do so. The law allows you. The very same section 68 allows you. Don't break it. Don't break that section. And there's no need to break it. It opens up for your action. Please, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Be part of action. Only. Finish. What else? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm not having the last one. And then I will offer the opportunity for responses with your client before the deal closes.
Thank you, Chair. Let me accede to your proposed way forward in relation to having the next meeting in a month's time instead of as opposed to 14 days. But the rider to that chair is that HDA must, in line with their roles and responsibilities as outlined in the implementation protocol, prepare and submit to the party's program implementation plan for consideration and approval. Such implementation plan shall include the appropriate management of funding that may be availed by parties for the implementation of the program. So we need a detailed program of implementation for the success of this plan. Two, all parties chair must give us a detailed report as to what have they done in implementing their roles and responsibilities. For an example, the city of Cape Town is entrusted with the responsibility to assist in facilitating and blocking of procedural bottlenecks that affect or may affect the program. So you must come to us and tell us what is done to unblock those bottlenecks, not to say you are committed to assist in unblocking the bottlenecks, but what have you done practically in relation to Section 68 to assist. We're going to measure your performance based on your practical Secondly, the city must facilitate release of city-owned land required for the program implementation. You must practically tell us which pocket of land that you identified and released for this program. Not to say you are committed, but your commitment does not go as far as giving us tangibles. It also says facilitate establishment of temporary residential areas and resettlement of households from identified rail networks. We need a detailed plan of action, what is done in that regard. Not to say we remain committed to assist. You committed, but over and above your commitment, what is it that you have done practically to realize this responsibility? Thirdly, Chair, all the signatures to this implementation plan, over and above having political heads appearing before us, they must come in the next meeting. In the city of Cape Town, the accounting officer, which is the municipal manager, must be here to account. He has signed on the and has committed to do 1, 2, 3. Over and above the mayor or the deputy mayor, please bring your accounting officer so that we can hold them accountable. Other departments have done the same. We've got the chairperson of the Prasa Board, we've got the CEO, the accounting office.
can ask questions, so that we want them to act on what they have signed for, and we can hold them accountable, and must reserve the right to summon them if they don't want to appear. We're not saying we've got problems with other subordinates, but we want those that are responsible for the implementation who have put their signature to come and account for Panama.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I just want to draw your attention of one to two things in your protocols.
Can I respond to the City of Cape Town on section 68?
I'm not on the floor, but I'm coming to respond to this before the DM closes. But in any case, you've got a dispute mechanism clause in the protocol. I don't get a sense that it's been utilized, because obviously there's been there in dispute and you emphasized them. Right? So that's point number one, it's item 17. Any disputes arising from this protocol shall be resolved in accordance with the principles and procedures contained in Chapter 4 of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. So in the reporting group, we will come there and report to each of these on these things. And the final one is basic. Item 19.3, SOL protocol. This protocol contains the whole of the contractual relationship between the parties. Not some, the whole. So, I really hope that, and you know this protocol, it was signed by DGs, HODs, it's a letter. So if it's failing there, that's why I was proposing also the 27, because there's no excuse of it being a cabinet day, it's a Thursday. No one can say cabinet. All right. I will now hand over to any responses that you have. DM will come to us. Deputy Mayor DM will come in at the end. Could you have sent you just an internal announcement for us on the public?
Okay, thank you so much. So I'm going to ask Arthur to make some responses. Fiona Stewart just to respond to regards to Section 68 and the interpretation thereof, including the legal opinion we have. But I just wanted to comment on the question of city-owned land, where is it? I think we've made the remarks that there were 12 parcels of land identified, and we've agreed that the most viable options were the ones that was presented. I can't confirm if the city manager has been sent an invite, but Pierre is representing his office as well here today, so I'm sure you're more than welcome to invite the city manager for the next engagement. Chair, then, just the one other comment that I wanted to make with regards to the 61 million rand, and so I note the request from the honourable member, but just to confirm that, and you'll see the responses that the mayor has written to Minister Kubai, we clearly identify where we propose those funds to be spent, but the 20th of June council, special council meeting was important so we can receive this fund and allocate accordingly to the informal settlement department so that they can include the ISUP program as well and for those identified areas. So that's information that we are able to give. But I just wanted to make those remarks, Chairperson. I'm not going to comment them on the golf courses. I'm happy to do that. It's going to be used for housing opportunities very soon. Just be patiently waiting for that. But I'm going to ask Fiona to talk about the interpretation of Section 68 and, of course, the legal opinion as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. The way the city interprets Section 68 is that it is a very specific mechanism to be used when there is an emergency of a natural nature where people on a specific site have to be moved immediately to another site which is not zoned for residential. In other words, the mechanism allows you to waive the zoning of the site where they are to be relocated in order to allow them to rebuild their homes. And that is very clear if you look at Section 68.7, which says that the city has to guard for public comments, and after getting those comments, the ultimate goal that Section 68 allows is that the city may declare the land to be emergency housing for a period of up to 90 days to allow the land to be used for emergency housing, and then there's another section which allows you to extend that. So the ultimate result that we would get from applying Section 68 is that the rezoning would be waived for only 90 days and an extension of 90 days. But we all know that this relocation is a permanent relocation. They aren't coming back, and the rezoning of the land to which they are moving has to be permanent, because otherwise what we're going to sit with in the city's perception is after 180 days, they are going to be illegally residing on land which is not zoned for residential. The city's only view is that Section 68 is not appropriate for this specific application. I don't know where the 18 months comes from for the rezoning application. My understanding is that if a rezoning application is made and Section 68 is not applicable because it's a temporary solution and we want a permanent solution, is that the city is obliged to expedite it through the normal rezoning process. And my understanding is that if the city does that, it's going to take between 3 and 9 months, if it's absolutely expedited, to get permanent rezoning in place. So the reason Section 68 was rejected is not because we think it's not applicable ever. We think it's not applicable to this specific relocation because it's not temporary. It's a permanent relocation. And Section 68.7 will get the relocation into the murky, illegal residing aspects if we don't do it properly. That's the city's view.
Thank you very much. That's fine.
Find what works. Right? So it's not Section 68. Find Section 1000. Find something. Find something. Go into that room and find what works. Unless you're saying there's no provision anywhere in the room, then say that. Find what works and make it work. Go and debate. Use another man. Come here with a roadmap and solutions and a response for the people and for the railway line. Right. Acting DG, Head of Security.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I think on our side, I think there are very much of use to explain what is gymnastics and so on.
Semantic gymnastics.
Yeah, yes. I think, Jefferson, some of us are planners by profession. I think you correctly cited a clause on the implementation protocol. I think ours is to take your leadership and instruction and maybe deal with this emergency issue through the implementation protocol, because we'll be confusing the disaster and emergency. Maybe the honorable member clearly stated the emergency. Maybe for us as officials is to go and try and find one another and find maybe a common interpretation in English as to what is the emergency. If people are inviting one another.
Can I ask that we can we not respond to each other? Because that invites response. If you want to say something, raise your hand. I'm not suggesting anybody to not speak.
Chair, maybe what we need to do so that we don't respond to another colleague here, that we go back and find one another and come back on the 27th and report to the community.
Well, that might actually not to you, don't worry. Right? Madam Chair of the Board of Plasma.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think I would like to express the fact that in this process, I think PRASA is actually, let us put it as the most interested party in ensuring that this the objectives of the implementation protocol are adhered to by everybody, because as stated already, PRASA has been getting on with the action in terms of trying to move with the opening of the central line, but then the impediments we've spoken about is what we all know. So we are a very, very interested party in ensuring that this can move ahead. Chair, let me say, as PRASA, we recommit here in front of this committee to ensure that we continue, as we have been doing, to implement the actions that need to be taken, but also to recommit that we will also increase our pressure within our IT to ensure that solutions are found. That will be amenable or applicable to all the agreements that we put in place for everybody's responsibility. So we, Chair, from a PRASA perspective, we do have those timelines that we shared with the committee. And unfortunately for us, Chair, we do not have the luxury of putting out our timelines beyond the timelines that we've committed to this committee, to the country, and in our corporate plans. So we need to find a way where bringing all the signatories of the IP together, we are able to exert our plea that we need to actually find a solution where we can do the relocation within the stipulated time. We therefore, I think, appreciate, Chair. I know the Chair mentioned that here we are trying to find a solution. It's not just about PRASA. But I must say, we do appreciate the fact that on a monthly basis, the IP signatories will have to come and account to this committee. So that I guess the foot will be on the pedal, and hopefully that will assist us to, in between those month intervals that we come, the heat will be on and we will be finding solution among us as officials to try and get this this country imperative actually done, Chair. So I'd like to thank Skopa for the time. I think we're clocked in here at 9 o'clock. This is the first, Chair, that I've ever been in such a very long interaction. But I think we really, from our side, on behalf of the board and on PRASA, let me appreciate the effort that, and the time outside of your sessions that has been put into getting this moving. So thank you very much, Chair, from PRASA, from the board, and thank you to the DM as well. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. DM, we'll hand over to you. And I'm sure there's a retort to my somewhere there. Now, me and my mama, they've got a better way of dealing with it. Chair, thank you very much. Thank you to the colleagues. No, but I have this to my mama, and I've never had him finding it difficult to defend something like I saw today. He tried very hard, but it was very, very difficult for him. And I sympathize with him. Because, you know, the older you are, the more difficult it is to defend something that you can see as clear as daylight. So, Madame Foga Baba, I sympathize with you. Let's have a cup of coffee and say...
and accept that we must find a way. We are learning. I think for all of us, colleagues, especially officials, different spheres, I think we have learned a lot. Honorable Somio summarized it so well. Those people are citizens of the city of Cape Town, Honorable Mayor. We want the citizens of Cape Town to be treated well. Whether they went there illegally or not, they are there now. And how can we assist each other? Using whatever instruments you have. As the chair said, if this one doesn't work, which other people think it can work, doesn't matter. Let's bring the one that will work. And I want to say, Deputy Mayor, from us, from the minister, and I'm sure I speak for other ministers also, if there is anything we can do, if we must meet outside this meeting, anytime, please call on us, so that we cannot bring our differences to this committee. This committee says, remove those people, and we are all committed. So I'm committing all ministers to say, if from a city point of view, there is a need that needs engagement at the political level of these departments, we will make ourselves available as a demonstration that we want this thing resolved, and we want it resolved yesterday. The protocol is there. We believe it's enforceable. Let us do that. We believe all the agreements that are there. If there's any doubt with those protocols that have been found, let's flag it and say what we can do. So mine is to say, Chair, as the Chair of the Board said, that PRASA is the most affected. That's why I can commit the other ministers to say we have to find a solution to move those people. Those are citizens of Cape Town. They deserve to live in a place that would have been habitable in the best way possible, and we want to do exactly that. Chair, thank you so much. The message will certainly go to the ministers that are not here, and we will await that particular commitment, or rather confirmation, rather, once you've got the necessary approvals. Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Colleagues, doing once, doing twice, doing thrice, God. DM, thank you very much, and to thank you very much to everyone who is here today. And I think that we have understood you better. I think we now can locate with a heightened sense of precision the focus areas. And I think you are the 10th part. On the 27th, we expect progress on all these matters, certainty and clarity. So on that note, colleagues, the meeting is done. Adjourned once again. Thank you for making time to do this. And I was still stealing more of your recess days because of that. But thank you, meeting adjourned.